Last week, the ABC ran at least two stories about Chinese satellites being used to monitor the naval defence exercises off the Australian East Coast. Take, for example, this story filed by Andrew Green.
High-end, lethal, naval warfighting drills. Australian warships training alongside Quad partners, the United States, India and Japan, an activity that was always going to draw strong interest from another emerging power.
The number of satellites are quite pervasive, so there are a lot of Earth-observing satellites that China has.
From this facility outside Canberra, a defence company has studied Chinese satellite activity over Australia during last month's exercise Talisman Sabre and the Malabar naval drills now underway off the east coast.
We've seen over 300 satellites surveying ground-based activities, and the number of overflights is thousands.
Three large Chinese geostationary satellites were detected manoeuvring into position below the equator last month, while hundreds of smaller low-orbit satellites track closer to the Earth's surface. In the global space race, Beijing has significantly stepped up its satellite launches over recent years, many with military application.
Australia, by contrast, doesn't own any military satellites and certainly doesn't have any capability to collect the sort of imagery that China's been collecting.
Defence says warfighting exercises like this are complex and well-publicised, so prudent measures are put in place to protect information security for all the participating forces. The department also insists it's tracking foreign satellite movements as part of broader space domain awareness, but critics say Australia is overly reliant on American surveillance.
We are confident about our ongoing presence in space.
Small steps, but no giant leaps. Andrew Green, ABC News, Sydney.
And consider also this interview with James Bennett of the Canberra company Electro-Optic Systems.
We've been collecting optical data, optical surveillance data on Earth-observing Chinese satellites during the Talisman Sabre and Malabar exercises. And what that's showing is quite a lot of activity surveying the ground during those events.
What sort of information do you think China can glean from all this satellite activity above Australia?
Yeah, so particularly above the operations themselves, they can glean military intelligence on what the capabilities and equipment and as well as processes of ground military activities. So they can use this to derive a fair bit of intelligence on military operations in Australia. So what we're viewing here is a 2D map of Australia. In green there is the location of the Malabar exercise, and all the red lines are satellite overflights of the ground. What we'll very quickly see is the image is quite busy, or the video is quite busy. There are a lot of objects that are flying over. So the key thing to note is the Yaogan series is quite a prevalent series of satellites, particularly the 35 series and the 36 series. They've been referred to in the media as spy satellites. We are seeing quite a lot of overflights from them. The Jilin constellation is also prevalent here. They're likely to grow in numbers to over 300. There's a future growth in the number of satellites that will be orbiting. So what that will provide is much more pervasive surveillance than what they have already. So it's just going to grow.
So what are we seeing here? Whose activity is this?
These are all the Chinese Earth-observing satellites that have overflown the site since the beginning of the Malabar exercise. So centred around Sydney Harbour is where the exercise is at the moment. It will shift out into the sea. But these are only a subset of the total number of objects on orbit. These are just the Chinese Earth-observing satellites. So we perform overflight analyses. So what we're looking for is manoeuvres, so whether or not these satellites are manoeuvring to position above a certain part of the Earth, in this case Australia. So we track objects of interest and we keep an eye on what they are doing. So we have detected quite a few manoeuvres during the exercises, and it's shown some interesting things on what they're doing to survey the ground.
In that interview, Dr. Bennett mentioned the Yaogan series of satellites. The military remote sensing satellites use optical reconnaissance, synthetic aperture radar, and electronic intelligence for maritime surveillance. Unlike optical systems, the radar can penetrate clouds and, as such, is used to monitor shipping in the Taiwan Strait. One series of Yaogan satellites are launched in triplets. They orbit in loose formation to locate radio emitters using the difference in the time of arrival of radio signals at the different satellites. The most recent Yaogan electronic surveillance triplets were launched on July the 26th and August the 10th. The other satellite services mentioned by James Bennett was the GLIN. These are commercial remote sensing satellites operated by Changguang Satellite Technology Corporation. They are named after Jilin Province, where the company is headquartered. The company has been funded by the Chinese government. So far, 130 satellites of a planned 300 constellation have been placed into sun synchronous orbit. There are at least six different types of Jilin satellites, reflecting the instrumentations used. An Australian who has been closely watching what China has been doing in space is Malcolm Davis. He is a senior analyst at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute in Canberra. By video link, he spoke to the members of the Space Association of Australia who were meeting in South Melbourne. One of the topics Malcolm Davis touched on was the concept of the high ground of space.
There's a debate in space policy circles about a high ground. Some people oppose it as a concept, say that it's a meaningless concept. When you look at this in terms of gravity wells, though, I think that there's more to the high ground concept than a lot of people would suggest. You know, the potential for operating from the moon or from Lagrange points where the gravity well is very shallow compared to the fact that on Earth you have to operate from the bottom of the gravity well, which is very deep, does suggest significant advantages in terms of accessing other parts of the solar system at less cost and more responsibly than operating everything from Earth or from low Earth orbit. So, you know, the fact that the moon is now becoming much more significant astrostrategically, I think, is important. Let me now turn to the private sector. This is something new. Xi Jinping opened up China's private sector in space in 2014 because he recognized that China's state-owned enterprises couldn't easily compete with the rapid growth and the innovative aspects of Western's private space companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin and many others. So he basically made the decision, let's open up a private sector for space in 2014. Certainly, it has received substantial assistance from the Chinese government and also through foreign investment. But you could make the same case with SpaceX and NASA. So there is a second element to the competition there. In addition to the state versus state side of things, you are seeing the growth of a private sector in China that will compete directly with Western and in particular US private sector space. And that's really significant. Once they start to get momentum, once they start to see success, particularly in terms of the launch side of things, I think that you will see, it'll be very interesting to see how the American government then responds to that in terms of supporting their private sector. And so you could have a second element in terms of competition between Western private space companies and Chinese private space companies. They say that imitation is a serious form of flattery. It's very interesting that in April, the Chinese Academy of Launch Vehicle Technology highlighted this concept, which was essentially a copy of the Starship Super Heavy vehicle. It's fully reusable. The Chinese are interested in pursuing development of this. So, you know, the SpaceX will successfully test Starship and Super Heavy, get it flying orbital, I'm sure, this year sometime. I would expect the Chinese to be hot on their heels in terms of developing their own capability because the Chinese recognize the importance of reusability in terms of space access. And taking that one step further and doing something that we have yet to do is the Chinese Tianyuan project, which is an aerospace plane, a dual stage two orbit aerospace plane that is launched off the back of a high speed vehicle in the upper atmosphere, flies into space, delivers a payload or does some other activity, and then lands and is reusable. So this is a fully reusable two-stage two-orbit vehicle. The Chinese are thinking in terms of a test flight for this in 2025. Space is an operational domain. Turning to the military side of things here, the Chinese are developing a full range of satellites for military purposes. Beidou is critical in this regard in supporting positioning, navigation, and timing for the PLA. Obviously, their reconnaissance satellites and communication satellites are also vital in that regard. But they see space very much as an operational domain and are developing a range of counter space capabilities that can threaten our access to critical space support in a crisis. The PLA rocket forces operate now as many as three direct ascent ASAT types that can threaten our satellites in LEO. And the Chinese have demonstrated both direct ascent and co-orbital counter space potential out to GEO. But I think more significant are the soft kill capabilities that can threaten satellites in orbit without necessarily creating massive clouds of space debris that threaten space access to everyone. The key point I want to make there, though, is that Chinese counter space capabilities are real. They're not some threat off in the future. This is the prospect of a space Pearl Harbor in a crisis, I think, is a serious risk. And that's important because of how we rely on space systems to function. And I'm sure you're familiar with this, so I won't labor this. But essentially, without space capabilities, we can't do any of these critical functions. We're deaf, dumb, and blind. We can't fight in a joint integrated manner. And the chances of us taking heavy casualties and suffering defeat in war is much increased. So the Chinese understand that space in every respect, I think, is a critical center of gravity for our approach to war.
Most nations are signatories to the United Nations Treaty on the Uses of Outer Space. Here is how Malcolm Davis views China's relationship to the treaty.
Yes, the Chinese are signatories to the Outer Space Treaty, signed in 1967. Now, the key thing with the OST is that it prohibits the deployment of weapons of mass destruction in space. So obviously there we're talking nuclear because chem and bio really would have no role in space. So no nukes in space, but it also prevents states from claiming territory in space. So in other words, the Chinese, according to the Outer Space Treaty, can't claim parts of the moon or can't claim the moon or can't claim an asteroid. That's prohibited against the Outer Space Treaty. If they did that, they'd violate it. Having said that, there are loopholes or grey areas within the OST whereby the Chinese could put a commercial base on the lunar surface with the purpose of extracting resources. That base quite legitimately could be staffed by PLA officers. And the Outer Space Treaty is vague in terms of defining what is military purposes, because the Outer Space Treaty says you can't use the moon or other celestial bodies for military purposes, but it's very vague in defining that. So I think that one of the efforts that's currently underway internationally is to try and establish, firstly, regulatory arrangements that make it more difficult to weaponize space, but secondly, establish norms of responsible behavior that then set the ground for something more, for new law or new regulatory arrangements that tighten the legal aspects of space and fill some of the gaps. And we would hope that the Chinese and the Russians would be on board with that. And the Artemis Accords, in part, are an effort to try and strengthen those foundations. But as I said, the Chinese have yet to sign up to the Artemis Accords, and they could be off to do their own thing. So I think that promoting legal, diplomatic, and regulatory efforts to strengthen arrangements is a very good thing. We need to maximize our efforts there. But we cannot basically invest in a strategy of hope. We need to back up those legal aspects with, you know, credible deterrence in space.
The Soviet Union, the United States, China and India have all tested anti-satellite systems. Now, these either destroy or disable an adversary's satellite.
The current indications are that they have three different types of direct ascent ASATs that are essentially missiles that can be launched from the ground up into space and collide with a target satellite. And those are operated by the PLA rocket forces. They have tested technology for such weapons being used all the way up to GEO, but they haven't actually deployed such technology. So at the moment, they can only threaten satellites in LEO with those direct ascent ASATs. They have also tested technologies that would be suitable for co-orbital ASATs. Now, once again, what they've done is they've deployed satellites that approach their own satellites to test out what's known as rendezvous and proximity operations. So they're demonstrating those technologies that could, you know, one day enable them to use co-orbital ASATs that could then approach one of our satellites and disable it. And we do know that they have ground-based counter-space systems such as cyber and laser dazzling and uplink and downlink jamming. But there's no indication at this point in time that they actually have ASAT weapons deployed in space.
The views of Malcolm Davis, the senior analyst at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute in Canberra. And that was recorded by video link with the Space Association of Australia, who were meeting in South Melbourne.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.